I really wanted the collection to be playful and provocative. And I do think that doing it in this house gave me license to do that. But it's also something that has always been an underpinning and an undercurrent in my work. But this time I felt like I could really reveal it. I felt like I kind of had license to do that.
You know, somebody was thinking that I was not choosing the people. It was people that were telling me, maybe choose that one, choose that one. I enjoy and I dream more about, like, for the future, let's say, on the continuation of my collection, like people that I like, I appreciate the work, you know, even if it is completely different from me.
I am Susie Menkes, and you are listening to my podcast, Creative Conversations. As a journalist reporting on the global fashion industry, I want to take you backstage and give you an insight into my world. Listen to my exclusive conversations with creatives, industry leaders, and those whose voices have some of the greatest impact. I think you might find it interesting and maybe intriguing. For this episode, I'm talking to Jean-Paul Gaultier and to Simone Rocha. I have the Parisian and the Londoner sitting here talking together because they just collaborated for Haute Couture. Gallic and Gaelic seems to have come together. Jean-Paul Gaultier is a famous French designer who founded his edgy, daring, and highly original design back in 1982. After his exceptional and original fragrances were supported by the Spanish Pooch, the company thrived. But in 2020, after nearly 50 years on the catwalk, Gaultier announced that he was to hand the couture baton to a guest designer, with a different one each season. Last January 2024, it was the turn of the Irish-born Simone Rocha to interpret the Gaultier codes for her generation. It turned out to be a most striking collection and a moment in fashion history. But he was a hero back in 1990, when she would have been around 4 years old, the year Gaultier made an impression on the world by dressing Madonna in a famous conical corset for the Blonde Ambition tour. Simone travelled from her London prêt-à-porter to the Paris Atelier to redevelop the couture elements for which Gaultier is so famous. Let's hear how they worked together. Or did they? I really feel the emotion. Your show was yesterday, but I am still feeling the heartbeat on it. How are you feeling?
Me, very happy. For me, it really is like a pleasure. It's like, you know, I am, when I go to see the collection, you know, I am into it. Like if it makes me, like if I was part of the collection, you know, and to see it when it's well done like it is, you know, for me is a big joy. I feel like completely like a dream, you know, it's going on, you know. It's like, you know, it's like if I have a children. In some way, it's a little, that's a feeling. I have no children, my children are here.
And Simone, what are your feelings? Do you really feel still a rush of joy, of excitement? How do you feel?
I feel amazing. It was such an amazing experience. And yeah, and I really enjoyed it. It was very, very infectious, the joy and enthusiasm. And it was quite, it was a little bit to the wire, but not to the point that it tipped me over the edge to not enjoy it. So yeah, I feel very proud today.
So you should.
You can.
So you should.
Thank you.
Jean-Paul, now that you've seen it, what is your feeling, your opinion about Simone and how she interpreted your Gaultier?
I think really, of course, because it's me that I choose the person that will do the collection, you know, it's myself, you know, I don't let anyone to do it because I feel that already I know the work of the one that will do the collection, of the designer. So I chose because I think it can bring something interesting for me, for the house, you know, and maybe with my style she can make something of her own, you know. So I was sure it should be good. I think that my shows were very good. And now I have even more. Like, so I'm completely satisfied. I should say that she interpreted very well, very well. I see it was a following of myself. And like I say, like new generation of myself.
You make it sound perfect, and I'm sure it was, but you still have yourself, Jean-Paul, such a powerful personal identity. How did it really feel putting Jean-Paul Gaultier, your name, your whole history of your fashion, into the hands of somebody else?
It feels that maybe, is that my pretension in some ways, that I feel enough good, like to, that somebody can take, not to have codes, you know, that are so specific, that somebody that has talent or that his own way of seeing can bring something over it, you know. So I feel not insecure at all about like what she can do on by the choice that I do, because I like the work of the person. I shouldn't take one someone that somebody tell me, oh yes, we can give you advice to take a new designer. No, I regret. I think like you. I think it should be the same thing for you. You know, after if you have to find someone, it's yourself that can know somebody that can treat and work well and to make even like expand the style, you know. So I think, no, it's myself and I love that, to make my casting of the designer I find interesting in it. But I am not disappointed at all. At least it's even better, because it's a surprise at the same time. But I feel really emotional at the end.
Simon, how do you feel about it? Did you think about whether you would be liked or not? And you didn't talk to each other at all, is that right?
We didn't talk about the collection at all. We had lunch and met and discussed other things, but we never discussed the collection, which I also loved that was that freedom and that, like, understanding as a designer, inviting a designer in, knowing that to be able to hand it over is how someone has license to produce something new. Mm-hmm. And that was amazing. So, yeah.
You make it sound very special, and I'm sure it is and was. But at the same time, it must have been quite complicated. You're a mother, you've got kids. So what did you do? Did you go over to Paris? Did you stay and do everything online? How did you work it?
No, I came to Paris every week since September. I've been here in the atelier at least once a week. And then actually some of the team and some of the atelier twice came over to me in London, to my studio, which was incredible because I'm also in show prep for my show in 3 weeks. So they came to me a little bit as well. But it was, yeah, I thought, you know, it's such an incredible gift and opportunity to have all these resources and have the license to do something like this in Paris. I was like, if I'm going to do it, I really want to do it properly. And I want to give it everything and make the most of it. And a big part of that was actually physically being here and really becoming this new language between myself and the atelier and the team and the archive and the physicality of that and how all of those things coming together could kind of produce this collection and show.
So this was your first time of having a fashion show in Paris. How did it feel? You know, it's something that's in the hearts and dreams of so many people over the years. And how did you capture the Parisian flair, and especially from Jean-Paul, how did you capture the spirit? If you weren't really there, you came over, went back?
Yeah, like it is a dream, and any designer would be lying if their dream wasn't to show in Paris. With my own shows, they always feel quite displaced to me, that when you come in and see the collection, you could be anywhere. It's very hard to feel like the location that you're in London. I always feel that their own little, like, in a black hole, where this I felt very much Parisian and in Paris and in the Marais and in the house, and especially some of the signatures of the house I wanted to play with and portray, whether it is the Marnier, and it was just these twists on something that felt very placed to me, and for me that was the way to kind of make it feel very present and Parisian in the room.
But it isn't as though you are some little girl or little woman who's never been out of London. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it's quite the opposite, isn't it, with your connections with two separate countries. Let's hear about those, and then you can explain what it's like to be thinking about living and working in another country.
Yeah, like, I'm Irish, but I also half Chinese. My father's from Hong Kong, and I grew up in Ireland, which I loved. A very special place to grow up on this little island. And I grew up in a very creative household. So that also was very, very freeing. And then to be able to move to London to be educated and set up my label there, what has been, I don't think I could be the designer I am without that. But as part of that, I've always travelled to Paris for our sales and showroom, etc. And I've always wanted to show in Paris. But it, as an independent, it would be a challenge.
Jean-Paul, give me a quick explanation here. Have you left Paris a lot? Have you travelled a lot? Have you gone to different countries and places? Or is everything that you do really come from your Paris heart?
You mean like if I was influenced by other country?
Yes.
Of course, definitely, I was influenced by London a lot. I always, yeah, definitely, because I always love London. And when I was going to London, for me, it was like free. It was a moment, you know, of the end of 70s and beginning, old 80s, you know. And London was so, like, incredible. Like, you were in the street of King's Road and like that. It was, like, incredible, you know. The Rocky Horror Show, everything. So I was saying I should have loved to work here and to stay there and to live here in England. I love the spirit. I love the twist. I love the humor. I love all, you know. So it was not possible because I was already working. But that is so. I went a lot to London and it inspired me. And I love the spirit of British people. And she's also mixed, a lot of mixed in herself. So she brings a lot of different things, you know.
And Simone, I have to ask you this. What does Gautier mean to you? Which elements or languages of the Gautier codes were important for you once you started doing the collection? There's the marinière and the corset and the other things to do with the water. And the, are these things that appeal to you as well?
Yeah, for me, the thing that really, for me, was the breast and the hip. And this intention of the breast and the bustier and the hip and the physicality of the body. One, because on the first trip to the atelier, first visit in the atelier, all the busts of all the clients and seeing all these different bodies, it suddenly, instantly made me think of haute couture in a completely different human way, that these pieces are made for a person. And then the physicality of that person, their breasts, their hips, this corsetry becoming some form of security, almost like a second skin. So I did a lot of them in the tulle to kind of show it more like a skin and more like a security and a support. That to me felt very instinctually Gautier. That's how I felt about it.
I tell you something else that I think we should mention, and that is sex.
Yes, it's very provocative.
I've never really thought of you as a designer who does sexual clothes. You've always been very strong in the lingerie and those kind of things for your own brand, but in a very different way from the way that Jean-Paul has approached that kind of spirit over the years. What is the lasting image of the famous corset that must have been made, you must have seen, the one that were for Madonna in 1990? And she did her Blonde Ambition tour wearing it, didn't she?
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, here we've got one person who knows all about sex when it comes to fashion, and there's you who's always seemed so quiet and polite. What happened?
Do you know what? I really wanted the collection to be playful and provocative. And I do think that doing it in this house gave me license to do that. But it's also something that has always been an underpinning and an undercurrent in my work, but this time I felt like I could really reveal it. I felt like I kind of had license to do that.
Now, Jean-Paul Gautier, you've always been very male in a witty way. Before the show yesterday, you explained to me you expected the show to be more feminine collection. Now you've seen the show, do you think that Simone has shown something that was more to do with what you were thinking of, a female designer? Is that the impression you got from seeing the show?
Definitely, yes. I think in some way, like kind of romanticism, I should say. There is some, I think we have a lot of things in similar, but she is being a woman, of course, but in a modern way. I mean, like she has an approach and not maybe will be frightened like to show some romanticism, you know, that maybe a man will do, you know. We do it maybe not like an expert, but for me, for example, sometime, you know, like a thing like with frills and things like that was too much looking like a cliché of woman, etc., you know. But being a woman mean you have not to be frightened by that because you know it, so you can treat it how you do and you do it well. You know, there is a difference in creativity. I think that the fact to be a woman, of course, and at the same time, we are equal in creativity. I think it's not a question of one better than another one. It's only interpretation, you know. Depends on reality, it depends on the person by itself. It's not a class of genre, now it's gender. I think it's creativity, it's like, can be open of everything. To be like very sensitive, you know, each one can, a man can be sensitive, a woman can be less sensitive. Mm-hmm. On the contrary, you know, it's each one has his own expression.
Simon, was there any problem in your head at the idea of when you're ready to wear star that you were going to do things that were completely different? It's a transition, really, to work with Gautier Haute Couture in an atelier. Did it feel a whole new process for you, or is it in the end making clothes?
No, I felt quite at home, actually. I've always worked with my hands. I've always worked on a model, on a stand. I've actually never been big at sketching. I've always been very physical in the process. And it was a similar process. It was very, very physical. It was always on a model. It was the same as like the fabrication on the body, or even looking at the archive and placing it on the body and on a different way. So, and that's how I kind of approach my work as well. It was amazing to be able to like execute it and mm-hmm. elevate it. The big difference for me was the pace, the slower pace and the focus to really make you consider all elements of the garment and all the underpinning and all the outer shell. And that for me was the, at the beginning, more of the challenge to slow down, because like you said, in ready to wear, it's like go, it's go, 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 go. And especially like in my own collection, I always treat it more like a narrative of a story and telling this story throughout the show with kind of a beginning, middle and end, where this, I wanted it, going back to the busts and the bodies, I wanted it to be quite individualistic as their own kind of characters. So that also kind of isolated each one. And I think it made every look better. Where sometimes I'm ready to wear, you're trying to do too much. You're trying to do everything at the same time. Where this is, it's the antithesis of that. You're not, you're trying to do one thing really well. And that was the challenge, but also a really good thing to take away from it.
Do you think you can continue with it? You already do personal commissions, don't you? So it isn't entirely a new idea that you're making clothes for specific people.
Yeah, I do try to avoid it. Because it is quite, it's very personal. When you're making something for someone, it's very, very personal. And sometimes that can be quite challenging. But I will absolutely still keep working with handwork, hand crochet, embellishment, and all of that is something, that artisanal approach and seeing how you can twist that for today is something that I absolutely will keep doing.
Ah, you don't know the question I'm going to ask now. Very quick and very simple. What did your mum and dad say after they saw the show?
My dad wrote to me there and he said, I hope you are really proud, because we are so proud of you. So,
that's a nice thing to take home on the Eurostar.
100%.
Tell me about the music that you chose. Did the music come to you? Did you want special things? How did you feel about that?
I really wanted the music to be quite rounded and fill the room, but still have this kind of glitch and this kind of disjointedness, this individualistic kind of clashing. And I also, because the room itself, I really wanted to bring it to its bare bones. So really opened all the windows, the curtains, laid the floor. So it almost felt, I wanted it to be like stripped back, so the music itself could be this very rounded thing in the room. So then I felt the girls walking through it would really cut through the room and cut through the music. So I worked with Frederick, who I work with on my own shows, and I kind of told him with this kind of clash and collision and contrast. And I also spoke about a body of work to fill these performances, where Monsieur Gautier had done costumes in 1986, in 1987, which is actually the year I was born. And then I spoke to Frederick. He said he had seen one of these performances in the suburb outside Paris. So we wanted to have that energy and that collision in the music as well. But yeah, I was very happy with how it all went together.
Yes, so were we. I know you've got to catch your Eurostar train back, and you're going back to family life, to your children. Thank you so much for doing such a wonderful show and inspiring all of us.
Thank you,
Susie. But also agreeing to do this today, it means a lot to me.
You mean a lot to me, Susie. Thank you. And thank you for everything you wrote about the show. I saw afterwards, and I was like, absolutely, exactly how I want people to feel. So thank you.
Well, I always like to write from the heart, you know. I'm not very good unless I do that.
Likewise. You have to tell the truth.
I wanted to ask you something because we've never really talked about the people you've chosen. Mm. And all of them, the ones you've chosen to replace you, have been for one season only. Did you have a favourite? Is there one person that you thought was exceptional, or were they all interesting in different ways?
I should say each one, to be honest. Each one, because each one brings his own style that was not the same. For example, Glenn Martin was truly like with more one line. He chose one thing and did it. Something that I am not able to do. You know, me, I am more like multi-directional, you know, like that, you know. So I appreciate for that. Sakai was also culture, like Japanese, you know, bring something which was different about, like, more abstract, the clothes, you know, more. So each one bring his own thing, you know. So I should say that I love it for what they could bring. And it's when I choose is exactly that. You know, somebody was thinking that I was not choosing the people. It was people that were telling me, maybe choose that one. At least, I think that I enjoy and I dream more about, like, for the future, let's say, or the continuation of my collection, like people that I like. I appreciate the work, you know, even if it is completely different from me. But I appreciate some people, so I want some people that can bring something, take what they want from myself, but make their collection, because I enjoy fashion.
Haider Ackermann was very much appreciated.
Yeah.
Is it very different when it's a man rather than a woman? Do these things make any difference to you?
We could think of that at the base, but there it's strange because it's a judicious question, because I think that Ackermann, he did a work that I should have thought about a woman. Because, you know, to be honest, when Ackermann did the collection, when I saw it, I felt like a client couture. Never in my life I did that. And I said, oh, I should buy it. It's strange. I never thought that about any collection or what I should buy that, you know. And there I said, I should buy that dress, you know, I should.
But what would you buy it for? To keep it because it was beautiful? To wear it?
No. I should say that I had like the reaction of a client. You know what I mean? It's like not like as a designer. It's more like I say, I understand that woman wants to have that. You know, I say, that is for the client. Beautifully done. Very simple. Very elegant. You know, it was not Gaultier at all, I should say. It's not a reproach, huh? But it was a beautiful collection. Of course, it was very celebrable, that collection. Very, very, but not in the bad way we can say, oh, it's celebrable, you know, like, no. I think it was like beautifully celebrable, and it sold very much, you know, which at the base was not my purpose to do collections that are celebrable, you know. But I thought it was at the same time a remarkable example of quality and also commercial, but not in the ugly way. So that is, you know, and it was a man who did it. I should have thought that it should be a woman more that should do that, you know, because feeling what she wants herself for herself, etc.
One question that we haven't asked Jean-Paul is, you're supposed to be an enfant terrible. That was the name that was given to you for so many times. Were you really a revolutionary? Did you think of yourself like that? And you brought a lot of drama and excesses to dressing, and also you started to mix in a really major way men and women's clothes. And were you trying to be very daring, and were you trying to be an enfant terrible?
I think I shouldn't, I didn't want specially to be an enfant terrible. I didn't even know who said that expression for me, which I didn't complain about it. That's the contrary, you know, for me it was a compliment. But I think that when you are young, you want maybe to break a little the role, or you want, like, you know, like I have a long time, when I was 13, I saw one movie, Falbala, and from that I said, I will do that profession. So it was a dream. So I started, when I did it, you know, I was thinking like, couture was not like in Falbala, was very, because I work at Patou, for example. Cardin, okay, was still great and creative, etc. But at Patou, for example, it was an old house, and it was all dead, and it was terrible, with some cliché, nobody, of very creative, you know. So I said, oh, all that, you know, I will make prêt-à-porter, because normally, when you start in couture, after you want to work in another big house of couture and to be the designer of the house of Dior or whatever, of Givenchy or, bon. So, yeah, I should have dreamed about Saint Laurent. But it was not possible. So I start to make collection with the creator of the 80s. And I think they were more creative than the couturier because they were getting old. I think is that the fact. It's like when you are younger, you are more with the envie, like, to break the role and to make new thing and to discuss that was supposed to be good. No, it is not good. Now is that is good, because you are more in reflection with the life of the young people, you know. And I think after you are, you get like, okay, I did that. So too much experience sometimes can a little be a good side, but also some negative side, like to stop you to be, and you have to breathe the fresh air. To be honest, I realize that, you know.
But you certainly changed things dramatically. You couldn't write about the history of fashion without thinking of that, about that. So you made some enormous changes. Do you think you've succeeded in the long run? It's certainly true now that men and women mix their clothes in a really profound way. Do you think that comes from you? Do you think you contributed?
No, it comes from the society. Because I felt it, I saw it, I was looking, I was also having, listening to some girls that didn't want to be like that, affected, and like walking, like, you know, with the hips moving. Some girls that were more like walking in another way, the hand in the pocket, you know. Movement and things that were showing that women were not maybe the cliché of be beautiful and shut up, you know. So it was not at all that, you know, women were different. So I wanted to show those women. Different kind of woman, and also appreciate other kind, more like a classical feminine. I can appreciate both, but I wanted to represent all. Not because I was thinking about economically to touch more people, you know, but more because it was representation of people I admire. I can admire one that is like very tough and very strong, etc. Another one who is completely evanescent, whatever. I love diversity because there is diversity in the world. Everywhere, and I wanted to show that I can like scarlet red hair one, and with a very pale skin, and the dark brown, and you know, Asiatic. I find beauty in different kinds, but I love the ones that are very like that are different. To be honest, I like to different profile, different nose, different always that, you know, particularity. Maybe that come also from London, because I was, is why I was loving so much London, because in the 80s and end of 70s, the street in London were with people with like more like eccentric, truly the English eccentric, you know, were exciting, but truly they have their own identity, maybe because you are insular. So I think that makes also, when you are insular, you keep on your own tradition. And the tradition, British tradition, are very strong, very strong. So I love that, I admire that, and I think that French, we were not like that. We're always judging, always that is elegant, not elegant, that is bad taste, good taste, always like that, you know. So it was more in reaction like that I felt, oh, I should love to be English in reality.
You've done so much in Fashion Extraordinary, and here you are doing something else, something original. But do you sometimes have a desire to do it yourself? Or is fashion really behind you in terms of you creating it? Is there a chance that you'll do one of your own collections and suddenly present it on us?
No chance. No chance. No, I think when I say I quit, you know, I didn't quit because I was obliged to quit. I decided to quit. It's because I think I have done, it's not I have done enough stupid way to say it. It's because I think I did a lot. I enjoy so much, you know, to do it. And I think that maybe I was not able to bring something interesting anymore. Honestly, you know, when you have done things like creative, is what I heard from what I was doing before. After one moment, maybe you don't realize anymore that you are updated and is something in fashion that is very bad.
Project and in thought, I know that I can't wait to see you this evening at the Sélection when we're talking about AIDS and such a long time, 30 years, thinking about AIDS. And do you feel very involved in those things? Are you looking forward to this dinner tonight?
Yeah, definitely, because it's part of my life also. You know, I lose some friend or my boyfriend because of AIDS, you know. So, of course, I am involved on the I tried to do what, because it's not finished, and we have to be careful always all the time, and to speak about it, and to still do things, we have to do it, you know.
What next for Jean-Paul Gaultier? Have you got another secret, amazing thing you're dreaming up?
I should say that I have some project, you know, like, for example, like animation movie. Somebody proposed me to do that in like Belgium, that I should do animation movies, so that's good. Or I am still my fashion freak show, which goes all over in Japan and whatever. Went to London a little. Maybe we'll go back to London a little longer, I hope. But it's that. I love that, in reality. You know, I always love like what is theatrical, but not like in a drama, but like more like something musical and like that. In my show, even, I liked always like to presentation to be like quite funny or different or whatever. So I love that now, or like to make, of course, but I am not excited to do the clothes of it. No, you know, I think it's like, no, it's more like even it should be good, even if I was asking like, come on, to somebody else to make the clothes, you know. I think it's not finished because I love to see what do some designer. I am always interested and I love fashion. But by myself, no, I think one moment I say, now stop. It's good. I did that because maybe I have the feeling that I cannot do more and as good, maybe or bad as before.
All your fashion remains in people's hearts.
Thank you.
And I'm so happy to have seen you, and this, you've always got some new idea to work on. Terrific. Keep on.
Merci.
I didn't think I'd ever meet you, and when you were being so calm about yourself and so apologetic that you're not designing anymore. But we love you so much. We are happy that you found this way of putting something of your spirit into these designs.
Thank you.
And I really enjoyed talking to the two of you so that we can think about fashion today.
Merci. Thank you. Great.
Merci. Even I can remember a little bit of French.
Thank you so much, Simone and Jean-Paul. A note to remember that although Gaultier is known as the enfant terrible, stirring up couture, he's always kept his respect for the tradition of craftsmanship. That was the seminal approach which Simon Rocha looked to the catwalk for the spring-summer 2024 couture collection. Next time, I'll be with Bella Freud, where I joined her in her London shop to discuss the 1970s Ginsberg, her fascination with filmmaking, and the famous Freudian slip, that ancestor in her family's hands. Creative Conversations with Susie Menkes is produced by Natasha Cowan, music by Jörg Zuber, graphics by Paul Wallace, and edited by Tim Thornton. To find my articles, visit susiemenkes.com and susiemenkes on Instagram. If you enjoyed the podcast, then please do rate, review, subscribe and tell your friends. You can find me on all the usual channels.